Thank you so, so much. It's an honor to be here tonight as the moderator. First of all, please, and I have to do this myself, silence all of your mobile phones. And please, we're trying to ask that no one applaud until after we finish the debate. After the closing statements, you can cheer as much as you want, but we're trying to keep it very civil tonight. Now, I'll be your moderator. The timekeepers are right in front, which you can all see, very visible from the stage. And I'm here basically, since it's football season, I'm here to prevent helmet-to-helmet hits and unsportsmanlike conduct. So the league has allowed me to break in if their folks are getting too testy, but this is a good crew, and I suspect that won't be the case. One of our candidates, Jeffrey Lemire, is here, but he's decided on his own volition that he does not seek to participate tonight. So let me introduce the candidates. First one to my immediate left is Kobe Jason Dennis. He's a Democrat. Then we have Robert Bob DeRobio, also a Democrat. We have the incumbent mayor, Jorge Olorza, a Democrat. And Diane S. Deedy Whitman, an independent. So we're going to start with the opening statements. Each candidate will have 1 minute and 30 seconds to give their opening statements. We're going to start with Mr. Dennis.
All right. I'm looking over here. The time is getting shorter and shorter, by the way. So once again, thank you for having me. My name is Kobe Dennis, and excuse my voice because I work with young people for a living. I am running for the mayor of your city of Providence because I love this city. First of all, I want to let you guys know that I'm having a great time. This has been a great learning experience, and I will continue as I go on to try to win this race to become the next mayor. Born and raised in Providence, I'm 47 years old. I actually came to this institution to try to get my bachelor's degree, which I didn't succeed once family came into the picture. I started a family while I was finishing up class here, and then from there on, I provided and supplied the support for my wife and my son to go on to be URI students as well. My wife graduated, my son is in his third year. I have three children. I run programs in the city of Providence for young people. I collaborate with the Providence Police, Rhode Island State Police. I started many organizations in the city of Providence, and I will continue to do that moving forward. Once again, my name is Kobe Dennis, and on September 12th, I hope you vote Kobe Jason Dennis. Thank you.
And now our next candidate is Robert DeRobio.
Oh, I pulled number four, so I doubt whether I'm next.
You skipped the line, brother.
But anyway. Sure? Okay.
Sure.
Good evening. My name is Robert DeRobio, and I am seeking the office of mayor in the city of Providence. I've been a resident of Providence. I've born here in 1945 in the Silver Lake section of the city, and I've lived on the east side for the past 48 years. My wife and I have had six children, and we have 11 grandchildren, and all of those six children have attended Providence Public Schools. When I began this quest to become your mayor in the city of Providence, at my initial declaration of candidacy, I had mentioned that I saw Providence as a tale of two cities. The one city that we heard about in various reports and in various news media, and the one that actually was the city of Providence. The past few weeks have reinforced my belief that this is really a tale of two cities. We hear of a Providence that is on the road to financial recovery that promises growth and capacity. We see a Providence that has had a fire sale of some of our major buildings in the Metro Center. We see one building, one financial plaza, that's been at a discount of $10 million since 2007. A sale of a 380 Westminster Street at a discount of $10 million since 2008. And an auction price on One Citizens Plaza of 50% since its assessed value. I believe in the city. I want to see the city grow. I want to be your mayor. I want to restore honesty. I want to restore dignity. I want to be the mayor of the city of Providence. Thank you.
And next we'll have the incumbent mayor, Jorge Olorza. You have a minute and a half. Please try to hold your applause until everyone's finished.
Boy, oh boy.
Good evening, everybody, and I want to apologize in advance. I'm nursing a little bit of a cold, so I'll be chewing on some of the cough drops. But it's been a pleasure and a privilege of a lifetime to serve as mayor of this amazing city for the past 3.5, going on 4 years. In these past 3.5, going on 4 years, we've seen amazing things happen, and I hope to continue them. You know, just 6 years ago, we were facing a Category 5 fiscal hurricane, and now after 3 years of record surpluses, we've built up a rainy day fund. We're in the strongest financial position that we've been in about a decade. And now that our finances are in order, we're investing in ourselves. We're investing $50 million into infrastructure this year and a plan to invest another $250 million into rebuilding our schools. And wherever we could find any resources, we've put them into investing in our young people, from a record level of summer jobs, summer learning opportunities, and summer camps that thousands of families have taken advantage of. We see the results of investing in our young people. Right now, throughout the city, we're experiencing the lowest homicide rates in over 30 years in the city of Providence, and all the major, most violent crimes have seen a precipitous decline, while at the same time, we have always found time and space to push back and fight against the destructive policies of the Trump administration when they conflict with our values. For all of those reasons, I ask for your vote on September 12th, and it will continue to be the privilege of a lifetime to serve as your mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. Now we're going to Dee Dee Whitman for her opening statement.
Good evening. I'd like to thank the League of Women Voters and my fellow candidates for participating. I especially want to thank Mr. Scott McKay for moderating. I'm Diane Dee Dee Whitman, and I'm running for mayor because it's time for a better Providence, and enough is enough. I imagine every candidate wants a Providence where our children would want to play, live, and work, and eventually raise children of their own, where crime is rare and our roads pristine. A better Providence would have safe schools that parents and teachers would both be proud of. Who wouldn't want these things? But talk is cheap. I'm a lifelong resident of Rhode Island and a fighter whose life has been formed by the kind of obstacles that made quitting impossible and honesty essential. Years of experience have given me the unique vantage point of seeing how the city's money has been wasted and how the city hall has come up repeatedly short for its citizens. So yes, I too want our problems solved. But we have to hire the right person with the right skills to do this. A person who faces challenges head on, a person who understands City Hall but isn't jaded by it. I am that person, and I will deliver a better Providence in November.
Thank you. That's our opening statement. We're going to move to questions now. The questions came from the League of Women Voters. And a lot of them came from the various neighborhood groups is where we got our questions. We also got some questions from Rhode Island Public Radio. My friend Dan McGowan over at WPRI.com and Channel 12 contributed a couple. And we also have some questions on cards that a few people filled out tonight as they came into the auditorium. So we're going to start in reverse order with the questions, which means Dee Dee will go first. And the mayor second. So let's start off here. The Fane Tower, do you support the zoning change to allow it or not?
I'm for development, and I hope the city council makes the right decision this week.
Well, what would that decision be?
Well, are you asking me yes or no?
I am.
I am not for the Fane Tower.
Mayor Alorza, how do you feel about that?
So it's a little bit more complicated. I've said on the record that I'm open to additional height, but you know, I get pitched on these proposals almost every week, and I've come to see that what gets initially proposed is very different from what eventually goes forward. And there are about 10 different steps that they have to jump through. And what I've said from the very beginning is that in order for this to be built, it has to work for the city. And what I mean by that is, first of all, design-wise, you know, this is going to stand out. And if it's going to stand out, it has to stand out from a design perspective for, as something that we can all be proud of. But also at the streetscape level, design level there, it has to fit in with what we're doing in that side of the city and in that neighborhood. Also, many of you know how much we've invested in our parks throughout the city. I am very concerned about it cutting into our park space, especially since that's supposed to be a centerpiece park throughout the entire city network. And so there are still a lot of questions to be resolved. In terms of height, I'm open to height, but there are a lot of other questions, mainly design-wise, that I need to be satisfied before I support it.
So in its current form, is that a no?
So the only thing that's before the city council is the height, and so that's the only thing that we have seen. I'm open to that, but the other steps, that's where I need to be satisfied before I get fully behind it.
Okay, Mr. DeRobio, what's your view of the Fane Tower?
I believe that that's a difficult question to answer, because to say no means that can be interpreted that you're against construction jobs, that you're against economic growth within the city. And that's definitely not what I am against. I want to see more economic growth within the city. As I have said on a number of occasions, the Fane Tower was proposed with no other buildings surrounding it, so it looked like it was one structure in the middle of this open, vacant piece of land that rose 600 feet in the air, and it just did not look compatible to the remaining part of the city. I would be for the Fane Tower if it was, if the proposal came through where it was developed a little bit further away from the Metro Center, such as in the Allens Avenue area, where that could certainly use some additional development and then be a lead-in to the Metro Center of Providence. So yes, I'm for the development. No, I'm not for the present location.
Kobe?
I would have to say I'm against the building of the Fane Tower, but I'm not against redevelopment and folks coming in to improve either the skyline of our city or the economic value of our city. What I really would like to see, what I would like to stop seeing, is the selective transparency. During the last administration, that's all we heard about was transparency, but people, you know, this zoning change should not just go to one person. I mean, we don't know what deals went on behind doors, just like with that and other TSAs that have given out. We don't know what has happened. So without true transparency, I would say no unequivocally, because the community needs to know what this entails. So are we going to bring in the youth builds? Are we going to bring in the year-ups? Are we going to have affordable housing in there? Is there going to be housing? These are all the things that haven't been answered. All we keep talking about is the height. What about the people?
And now we're going to go to another question. Kobe, you will start first on this one, and it kind of segues into what you were just mentioning. Affordable housing is a growing concern in the city. There is a rent control ordinance that DARE is advocating. Would you support some form of rent control? We're starting with Kobe.
Absolutely. I would support rent control, mainly because I'm on the ground daily with these people. When I'm knocking on doors, they're not asking about the Fane Tower. They're not asking about TSAs. They're asking about living somewhere safe for them and their children. So I would absolutely support affordable housing, but I would also like to define affordable housing. Affordable for who? Okay? The minimum wage gap between, the wage gap between men and women. We have for minorities. We also, for young people, all the wages are different, and a lot of people don't know that. You know, you get paid different with your age. So things like that, when we have young people coming out of college that want to get houses and apartments, how are they supposed to be here? How are they supposed to sustain a regular lifestyle if we don't have true affordable housing?
We go next to Bob DeRobio.
I would have to agree with Kobe. I'm definitely for affordable housing within the city of Providence. But I also feel that there has to be some adherence to ordinances that prevent landlords, that prevent new developers from coming into the city, taking over properties, and making them so that the people that are in those existing properties have to move out once those properties are redeveloped. I believe that the people have to be part of the community. I believe that the people have to have some say in where they are moving to, when they are moving to, under what conditions they are moving out of, and this is all part of that affordable housing structure. I would also advocate for the number of abandoned properties within the city to be developed and to be utilized for housing for a number of people that are out there that don't have that currently. There are over 750 abandoned properties within the city. They need to be developed by the contractors living within the city and that know the communities, know the people that are ready to move into those properties.
And now we go to the mayor.
So absolutely, in the support for affordable housing. You know, Providence is at a really critical point right now. Do you know that we consistently rank among the top five cities in the country for inequality in income? One of the top five in the country. We have the haves and the have-nots. And we're at a critical point right now because you see so much of the growth and progress throughout our city, and we don't want to turn out to be an Austin, a Seattle, or a San Francisco, that eventually the people who live in the city, who grew up in the city, are being pushed out because they can no longer afford the rents. In fact, this is happening just up north in Boston. So we have to make sure that we're providing housing opportunities for people throughout the socioeconomic scale. We've supported this over the past several years. We have a 40-unit affordable housing development called Maple Woods. We're also supporting a 60-unit affordable housing development called 60 King Street in the Olneyville neighborhood. We're in the process of renovating 27 continuous abandoned properties, and we have fixed 400 abandoned properties throughout the city in the past 3.5 years.
Dee, one question we do, excuse me, not a question, one quick request. Can you speak a little closer into your microphone?
Sure.
Move it closer, that's all.
Sure.
Same question.
Better?
Yes.
Well, I feel snookered with the yes and no from last question, so... I'll tell you, I really agree with Bob DeRobio and Kobe, what they have to say. I think there's a tremendous amount of abandoned property that if we bring and collaborate with all the stakeholders, we can do something that can renovate these homes and we can bring people in to live in these homes affordably. We have to use our heads. We have to be smarter. There is a big problem with rent control, as Bob said, where developers come in, they buy up the homes, they renovate it a little, and they use that as an excuse to kick the rent-controlled renter out. And that's actually unacceptable. But I feel we really all have to come together and use our heads and make this city a city that it should be, where it can house its people, all its people.
We're going to... Thank you, Joe, but we're going to keep this, try to keep it on message here, and after it's over, we'll have time to chat. Now, the mayor will be next. Just wondering, what level of collaboration, if any, is the correct level for local law enforcement, the Providence Police particularly, and federal immigration agents from ICE? What is the appropriate level of collaboration that those agencies should have?
Well, you know, there is a great deal of collaboration between our local law enforcement and immigration enforcement. In fact, every city in the country collaborates with ICE. But what we've said repeatedly is that we are not federal immigration agents. We should focus our scarce public safety dollars on chasing down the bad guys, right? People who are committing serious crimes. And in fact, it makes us all less safe if we're spending our scarce public safety resources on a woman who forgot to put her turn signal on and harassing her whether she has immigration documents. And again, we are not federal gaming agents. We are not federal IRS tax agents. We are not federal parks agents. You know, we're a local police department. We know how to police our streets, and that means building up relationships between the local community and law enforcement. Every serious major police chief in the major city police chief in the country will tell you that that's how cities are made safer. That's what we have focused on, and that's in no small part the reason for why crime, especially the most violent and serious forms of crime, have dropped tremendously over the past 3 years here in Providence.
Next question for Dee Whitman. Same question?
Same question. Well, I would never send out the police to look for anyone who's here illegally. But if anyone were arrested and there was a warrant out for them, I absolutely would have the police bring them to the proper authorities. The law is the law. I also would never believe in separating families, but there is a price to be paid. If you're here illegally and you commit a crime, you need to go back. You need to go back where you came from.
Bob DeRobio, same question.
I believe that we are within the city tying the hands of our police force in doing what they are, what they have been trained to do. Putting this additional obligation onto them about policing with regard to federal crimes or with regard to immigration issues is another layer on top of what they have been trained to do. If a person, one of our residents in the city of Providence commits a crime, and in the process of the investigation, these types of issues come up, then they should be reported to the federal government. If the person if the police are out there specifically looking for this type of incident, then I feel that that's not the role of our Providence police force. Let them do what they are trained to do. Let them train for the crime that's in our neighborhoods, the larcenies that are taking place, the number of infractions that are happening, both on the east side, the west side, the south side, the north end. Thank you.
Kobe, same question.
So the one thing that actually really bothers me is that we put these names out there and these labels and we throw these numbers. And the one thing that really bothers me is the Sanctuary City label, because the only person on this stage that has done something for illegal immigrants and people that are here and being abused or coming from other countries is myself. Community forums, I've had over 30 community forums with law enforcement statewide, Cranston Police, Providence Police, North Kingston State Police, so on and so forth, with hundreds of people there of immigrant status, citizen status, and talking and engaging, rubbing shoulders with law enforcement. That's how you protect people, that by getting them to understand one another. So you can label this city whatever you wish. If you're not on the ground doing the work, it's doing nothing but putting a label on their back. So once again, I am for people doing the right thing and being here legally. But if we're going to say that we're protecting these people, get on the ground and do the work.
The next question will be for Kobe Dennis, because you're going to start. And what we're looking for answer on this one is, you know, even the Trump Justice Department is coming after the city, asserting the city doesn't do enough to help English learner students. How would you pay for all the changes the city will be required to make? Start with it.
First of all, anybody on this table panel has the answer to that question. I'm going to go work for them. That's first. And another thing, I don't have notes. It said in the script you're not supposed to bring any notes, so I didn't have all that. But I'm just going to have a conversation with you, which you're supposed to do. So what I would do is try to get innovative. We have to do different things in the city. We have to do things differently. Let's try our hardest to bring in revenue with small business. Let's start with small business, okay? We need to get our businesses to sponsor these different programs. We have thousands of small businesses. Why aren't they in the schools helping out? This is how we're going to get different funding. Or even if we went to big business. When's the last time you've seen a Macy's Little League team? You haven't, because they don't sponsor any. Okay? So the mall is right there getting all this revenue. Yes, it's for the city, but they need to also do some more for our young people. So as far as English learners, we need help with that, because we don't have the funding. And people have been kicking the can for long enough. So let's stop kicking the can and pick it up.
Bob DeRobio, your answer to that question?
The English language learner issue was something that I brought up in a press conference a couple of weeks ago. And I was appalled by the fact that parents had made a complaint back in 2016 that affected their children, and that they were asked to sign waivers making a decision whether to take their child out of special education and put them in the ELL programs, or taking them out of ELL programs and putting them in the special ed programs. And the part that was appalling to me was that the waiver that they were asked to sign was in English, and no one in the family spoke English. So they were signing a waiver not knowing what was in that waiver form. The complaint went all the way to the Department of Justice. The Department of Justice came back with several recommendations in August of 2016 and in August of 2017, and a final decision in March of 2018. That decision had 12 major points to it. Many of those points were addressing the fact that a number of our teachers are not equipped or to handle ELL programs within the school, and also that many of the administrators were not trained to work with ELL students in the school. And I can continue that discussion in another question, which I'm sure will bridge into that. Thank you.
Mayor Alorza, same question.
For the past several years, you know, I and a broader coalition have been screaming at the top of our lungs about the need to do more about ELL services throughout the state. Every state struggles educating its ELL students, but no state struggles more than Rhode Island. We are dead last, 50 out of 50 out of every state in the country. And it's not coincidental that we are one of the few states in the country that does not factor English language learners into our statewide education funding formula. So because of this advocacy, we were able to get some state dollars appropriated for ELL learners. And you know, that's a big victory and we're excited, but we need to do much more at the state level. At the city level, we've also been putting significant resources towards this, knowing that ELL students need more support, they need more services. And Mr. DeRobio is right. You know, we need to recruit more ELL teachers into our schools, and we have a creative program that we have partnered with Roger Williams University to do exactly that.
And Dee Dee Whitman, your view?
Well, I think you're going to have difficulty attracting teachers when you have teachers here who have been working for 2 years without a contract. That speaks volumes. On another note, Kobe, maybe you're going to want to come and work with me because according to the mayor, we have such a surplus, so maybe we can take some of that money and put it into the program. But I want to tell you, this lawsuit cost the city council by surprise. It cost the citizens of the city were caught by surprise. It's a horrible thing to have happen. There is another city that I've read about that incentivizes families. They provide dinner. They ask the family to come. If the family comes and takes a course or two, and perhaps English, they are given a family meal. And at the same time, while the parents go and do their thing, they're learning, the kids are watched. So we have to use our heads.
And now for the next question, this will be started by Dee Dee Whitman. The last shall be first, as we know. And this one is going to entail the pension system. We all know that there's a large unfunded liability in our pension system. The mayor has advocated a plan with a water board transaction, leverage our water supply board to try to shore up the pension. What's your plan for the city's underfunded employee pension system?
Well, the first thing I would do is I'd close the doors on new hires and I'd put them into a hybrid system. Secondly, I would then call in, when I'm elected, I would call in the experts who have handled this in other cities. And as it is, I've already spoken to someone who handled the problems in Detroit. There are ways you can look at the contracts and see how you can negotiate things that are actually other than what we've promised the retirees. Also, there is room to negotiate on the health care benefits of the retirees. When I tried to find out what the census was about who was doing what and who was on what, whether people were on disability, whether people were eligible for Medicare, the city, people in the city that I went to didn't even have a census about that. That's a shame and that's a disgrace.
And we have the next question will be for the mayor.
So, one thing off the bat to understand about the water supply system is that it's an enterprise account. You know, many people think that the revenue that water brings in, it comes into the city. The city budget doesn't see a single cent of the water supply company's budget. And so it's an asset that we have that doesn't do anything for the city. except for expose the city to liability, and it also exposes our credit rating. Now, how is it that a city such as, let's say, Johnston, can take our water, mark up the price, and all of that additional revenue goes into their system, but the city of Providence is prevented from doing the same? That's just unfair. It's unfair. Now, my point is, if anyone is going to make money off of the system, it should be the city of Providence. We created it, and we take on all of the risk. Now, I've proposed this solution, and my point on this is, you don't have to agree with my solution, but you have to propose a real alternative. You know, some of the suggestions that you just heard, saving maybe $1 million here, or maybe $10 million here, you know, $100,000 here, that's just not going to get it done. We have a $2 billion unfunded pension liability. We need a big solution. We need to have an honest conversation about this.
Bob DeRovio, your view of this, the unfunded pension system.
If the unfunded pension system is connected to the sale of the water supply, then I've come out on record as being against the sale of the water for this particular purpose. As far as bringing in additional revenue to the city to address the unfunded pension liability, my stance is that we have a budget adopted by the city council, proposed by the mayor. Every additional dollar that comes into the city from that point forward, from the adopted budget, should go into a special fund that would go towards paying down the pension liabilities that we have. The other part that I have is that we need to have another actuarial study done with the number of people who are potential retirees and the amount of contributions that are done. That would give us a good number as to where we stand with this ratio. And finally, that we need to look at the investment of our current sources of income and see if we are overestimating what that return will be. We have had that money invested, and it says it is bringing 8% to the city. I believe that a realistic number would be in the 4% to 5% range, which would throw some of our studies off.
And Kobe?
Yes, this has come up over and over, and I still stand the same as I have in the beginning. Please do not sell Providence Water. As it was said by many of the people on this panel that, you know, Providence Water is our most valuable asset. So why, as smart people, would you sell your most valuable asset? Okay, we have to get together collectively. My whole mantra is collective leadership. We need to get together. I will be the 39th mayor, and there is 39 cities and towns in Rhode Island, and none of them work together, okay? Collective leadership will be getting these cities and towns together because we don't outright own Providence Water. It's owned by the ratepayers, okay? So a lot of the things we need to do is, with this whole transparency thing, we need to start looking into it and also start letting the ratepayers look into their options, okay? That's how you govern. That's how you lead. You show people the options, and then you give them a chance to decide. We got to stop throwing things down their throat, these quick fixes, and then we have to deal with the consequences later. That's called kicking the can once again.
Our next question will begin with Mayor Alorza. Are colleges, universities, and hospitals contributing enough to the city? And if not, what more should they be required to do?
I think there are two things that universities and hospitals should do. You know, it's really hard to balance the city's budget. We have to pay 100% of our costs and only about 52% of the tax base. Right? It just doesn't add up. And so there are at least two things that I believe that they should do. The first one is, you know, paying taxes on non-mission essential buildings. Look, I get the argument that maybe there's a charter from hundreds of years ago that says they don't have to pay taxes. I mean, I disagree with that, but let's, for the benefit of the doubt, grant them that. If you're renting to a McDonald's or a Dunkin' Donuts or an Au Bon Pan, you should be paying taxes on that just as every other landlord in the city does. So paying taxes on non-mission essential buildings. And we've sponsored and we've promoted a bill that does gets them to do exactly that at the State House. The second is, just as we've seen in Pittsburgh, we've seen in St. Louis, we've seen in Massachusetts and Cambridge, they need to be much better partners in investing in the local community, making sure that we're building up the knowledge-based economy of the future, and it starts with their participation and engagement.
Kobe Dennis, same question. You're next.
You know what a lot of this has to do with? Residency. A lot of these people that made these decisions, they don't live in Providence. They don't live next door to Brown University. They don't live next door to all these nonprofits. So they gave them this grandiose deal of paying the taxes of 2 to 3 homeowners combined. Can you imagine that? Brown University pays the amount of taxes that 2 or 3 homeowners pay. That's downright ridiculous. Who would make that deal? So say we made that deal, which we did make that deal. So it's called a silent services in lieu of taxes. Okay, well, what services are you providing? You have these beautiful fields. You have this beautiful campus. You have emergency boxes that light up to call the police. Why can't the city have all that stuff? If you're giving us services, we want what you have. I want beautiful fields. I want beautiful parks. I want an emergency box on Broad Street so somebody can call the police. I want the extension of services from these universities and these nonprofits to help the city of Providence. So if you're not going to pay, you're going to help us out.
Bob DeRobio, your view of what the nonprofit should contribute?
Right. I would like to add on a comment to what the mayor has already said with regard to real estate and paying taxes. I also think that the Providence Journal has done an expose on the number of vehicles and the tax structure for vehicles that the universities and a lot of the nonprofits have in their
Channel possession. 12, WPRI, you're talking about, right?
It could be, but I read it in the Providence Journal.
Shameless.
But I think that that's another way that the colleges and universities have to come up with what they owe both to the city of Providence and to many of the other cities throughout the state of Rhode Island. Because those car taxes would be, I believe that the number was over 2,000 that were exempt, and those were cars and vans. But the other areas I'd like to mention is that the mayor had mentioned that Roger Williams University was doing the program in training English language learner teachers. And I believe that every college and university should step to the forward and provide that training for our teachers so that it comes at no cost to the teachers. We have had a pool of teachers that have been hired to do a specific purpose, a job within the schools, and now they're being asked to enhance their credentials and get that additional training at their cost. The colleges and universities can certainly help us out in taking a lot of those courses and making them free to the teachers within the city of Providence.
Dee Dee Whitman, same question.
Well, it's clear we need better collaboration with our nonprofits, with our universities and our hospitals. It's remarkable that the land values in Boston, the nonprofits pay 20%, and in Rhode Island, or in Providence specifically, it's 4 to 8%. That speaks volumes as well. I do believe, you talked earlier about English as a second language, I do believe that the schools, that the universities can collaborate again with us, where why don't they have a lab school? Every university should have a lab school. Johnson and Wales should have a lab school. Brown should have a lab school. They can fill in and help us where we need it most. So I think we need to talk with them. We need to bring them into a room, and we need to say, you know, you're not going anywhere, and we're not going anywhere. It's like a bad marriage. Let's make it work.
Speaking of bad marriages, there seems to be some problems with the teachers' union and the administration. So just wondering, what are your ideas to have better relations between the teachers' union and City Hall administration? Dee Dee, you will start first this time.
Well, I think it's a disgrace that any city employee would be going for 2 years without a contract, especially our teachers.
Pull that microphone a little bit closer, please.
And it's 1 year, by the way.
It shows a lack of leadership and a complete disregard to the value of our teachers. So I'm hoping that the issue is settled before November. That's all I can say.
Bob DeRobio, you're next on the same question.
Well, excuse me. I believe that when we negotiate contracts, it has to be not at the at the end of the contract cycle, but certainly within that 9 or 8 month time frame prior to the contract ending. That way we can reach consensus on a number of issues prior to getting into the problem of either returning to work or going without a contract. So we have to do a lot of consensus building with the teachers or with any union within the city of Providence. We have to begin negotiations before the contract expires. We have to sit down at the table and put the issues on the table and reach some type of agreement on a number of those issues. And it's even possible to have contracts that automatically roll over for an additional year while the main part of the contract stays in place. A lot can be done to prevent the situation that we have before us. I was out at the schools this morning. Here are kids coming in with smiling faces, backpacks, new clothes, ready to start learning. And here are teachers waiting outside the building for their rule to work, work to rule type situation. It is not boding well for the city of Providence.
And Kobe, your view.
Yeah, I want to leave off with Dr. Rubio just left off work to rule. You know, and a lot of the parents, which I've explained to them thousands of times, what it actually means. Because when you're on the ground, those are the calls that you get. So while I'm trying to take my own daughter to school today, my phone just kept on ringing because people are wondering why there's no teachers in the schoolyard. People are wondering why that they no longer can leave little Johnny, you know, on the swing set by himself, I mean, with a teacher, because they're not getting out of their vehicles. That's what work the rule is. That's who it's affecting. All right, the second grader that was excited to see his teacher today but had to wait until the time was to clock in. We need to sit down with these teachers and we need to come up with a resolution. Both sides need to play ball and realize what the goal of being a city servant is all about. It's about the people.
Thank you so much. Now we're going to go to our next question. This will start with...
Can I get that last question?
Of course you can. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Scott. So, you know, part of the challenge that we have in our schools is that we've done the same thing year after year after year, and we expect different results. You know, when you look at urban education and you look at the results that we have here in Providence, you know, we all know that, you know, our schools don't currently or historically have a stellar record of preparing our kids for the world that awaits them. And so the question is, are we going to do the exact same thing and expect different results? Or are we actually going to do what we bemoan the fact that leader after leader after leader of the city has never done, and that's make sure that we have something transformative that's demanded and expected out of a contract. Now, we all know that time on task matters. Our kids spend only 20% of their waking hours inside of a classroom. The other 80%, they're off in the community, in the neighborhood. Yet we spend hundreds of millions of dollars in that 20%, and we spend peanuts in the 80%. We need to rebalance that so that regardless where our kids are, they have access to the learning tools that they need that prepares them for the world that awaits them. Now, the reality is that we're facing massive deficits in our school department, something to the tune of about $30 million, as it is, over the next 4 years. I refuse to kick the can down the road. We need to tackle these issues head on, and I'm willing to give teachers raises if I believed that a raise would lead to dramatically increased outcomes and achievements in our kids. It would happen overnight. But we can't be naive to expect that suddenly, overnight, something miraculous will happen simply because they received a 1% raise.
Thank you so much. Our next question will start this time with the mayor. And I'm wondering, do you support an LNG facility at the Port of Providence?
No.
Well, we're going to go to Dee Dee Whitman on that same question.
Well, listen.
Let's keep quiet the crowd and let's listen to Ms. Whitman.
It's a complicated issue. I know that I don't profess to know everything, but my gut tells me no, but I really would like to find out more about it. But no is where I would stand now.
Kobe?
I would say no.
And Bob DeRobio?
No.
Well, that was a easy one.
We cooperate sometimes.
Of course. There's an awful lot of talk these days, particularly among some of the merchants, about homelessness, particularly downtown, and also out in some of our neighborhoods. I'm wondering, what kind of plans do you have for combating the homelessness that we see? And Bob DeRobio, you'll start on this one.
I think the conditions in the city are just deplorable, particularly in the evenings. And when you look at City Hall, and it should be the mainstay, should be the focal point of the city of Providence, and you look at what happens there, particularly in the evenings and what we have to wake up to in the mornings, it's just a condition that I don't want to see in my city. To work with the homeless, I believe that we have to look at the issues that are affecting this homelessness problem, to look at where we can place the homelessness, and that goes, within our housing, addressing some of the questions that we had with affordable housing, but also to have some facilities available during the day where the homeless can go to and be productive members of the community, to just serve them breakfast in a facility and then put them back out on the street gives them the opportunity to pick a corner, to collect money from various motorists at each corner, and puts their lives in danger at these particular places. We have to have some facilities where they can go to during the day and become productive members.
Same question to Ms. Whitman.
Well, no person in Providence or anywhere else deserves to sleep on concrete. This is really where I'd work with state officials to try and figure out how we can help really our most vulnerable. It is really terrible to see them gathering downtown. It says to businesses probably wanting to come in and develop that maybe this is not the city we want to be in because they seem to congregate downtown. But again, no person should not have a bed to sleep on or a mattress to sleep on. And I would bring in state officials, and I would work with all the resources that are here to try and put people in the best services that they can get. Homelessness, unfortunately, very often turns into mental illness, turns into drugs. So you need to bring a variety of service to that person, and you need to try and integrate them into what could be the best healthy living for them. But again, they don't belong downtown. They need a mattress to sleep on.
Mayor, you've dealt with this problem for quite some time. Your view?
Yeah, and the approach that we've taken is being creative, collaborative, and compassionate. You know, we're not in the business of simply shifting the problem from one corner to the next. If we're going to address homelessness, we have to address the root causes and remember that these are human beings behind it. Now, you know, what has become very clear to me and many of us in the community is that many of the folks who are panhandling, they're not actually homeless, but almost all of them do have really significant mental health challenges. So what we've tried to do in the city is connect them to the services that we need. We have a creative partnership with Amos House called a Hand Up program. And so this is city funded, and every day someone from the Amos House goes out and it gives jobs to people who would otherwise be panhandling. But there are three pieces to this. First of all, in order to qualify, they have to either be sober or be part of a rehab program. We don't want them to use this money to feed their habits. They earn about $50 a day, and we use them to, you know, clean up a public park or some of our public roads. So it's a win-win-win all around. But the main point is to connect them to city services, to state services. And finally, we also have the Shower to Empower program. We know that many people simply need a place to handle their daily business, and we use that as a tool to draw them in, to connect them to the mental health services that they need.
Thank you. And I believe we have Kobe.
The word that comes to mind, which is with many programs in the city and different programs, different problems in the city, is oversight. There's no one really overseeing, these programs, the nonprofits. No one's checking in on nonprofits to see what the rules and regulations are for the homeless population. Many people that complain about them being out there in the morning don't understand that they have to leave these places in the morning. Well, where are they going to go? Okay, everyone deserves a home, and unfortunately, these people do not have homes. A lot of them are military veterans, which I am. So I understand their plight. It is tough out there. So the things we need to do is provide oversight. There should be someone going to these different nonprofits, once again, tax-free organizations, and making sure they're doing everything possible that they're supposed to do to care for these folks. Okay, and to say that we didn't push them out of places, well, that's not the truth. Most of the homeless population used to be downtown Providence. They're not anymore. They were pushed out into my neighborhood. So I know firsthand what it's like to deal with the homeless population, and weekly I try to do something about it.
Our next question, the first person, will be Bob DeRobio, and it's, why do you feel the Community Safety Act, the CSA, and the Providence External Review Authority, the PERA, are still not fully functional? Let's please try to keep it. God.
I pass on that question. I'm sorry.
Okay, we'll talk to Kobe. What's your view of that?
Well, once again, transparency. We have all these boards and committees, and it looks nice in the paper or online, but they're really not. I know plenty of people that are supposed to be on these boards. They're not fully functioning because it's not a concern, only when there's a problem. So the reason also is the communication between law enforcement and the community. It doesn't really happen, okay? That is all a fallacy. It's really not happening, all right? The police officers, I love and respect law enforcement to the fullest, but they don't have the ability to be able to communicate with the police because they're told by someone else, okay? It's a military, it's a paramilitary organization. I was in the military, so I know about this. So it starts at the top, okay? Unless the mayor tells them what to do, that's just how it is. So with all due respect, until law enforcement gets a better relationship with the citizens, these two organizations are not going to be up and running, and things... CSA definitely is not going to be enforced.
Mayor Alarza?
With all due respect, Scott, I think that's a misleading question. As part of the actual ordinance, it doesn't go into full effect until the new year. And so that was always contemplated. And also, when you look at PERA, PERA is a creature of the city council. PERA has been fully impaneled, and they're in the process of hiring an executive director. And so it's not fully implemented because that's the exact wording of the ordinance.
And we must go to Dee Dee Whitman.
Well, from what I understand, the members on the PERA Commission are highly regarded members of our community. I also believe that the CSA is one of the, from what I've read, is one of the strongest in the country. It is up for review, if I'm not mistaken, in December by the City Council. And we need anything in play that will help our citizens and our police to get along, to provide a safe city, to provide that no one is the victim of discrimination. And I have talked with police who said they're not against it, and I hope this works to the benefit of our community members, of our residents.
Next question. This comes from the audience. Mayor Alarza will take it first. What can be done to control what was described as runaway disability costs among some of our city employees?
Runaway disability costs, I think, a lot has been done. A lot has been done in the HR department to make sure that, you know, we're cutting down waste and fraud. But I want to tie back to this challenge that we have with our unfunded pension liability and also our unfunded retiree healthcare liability. You know, the easy things such as, you know, finding fraud or cutting waste, quote unquote easy things, those have already been done. There is no simple solution to our long-term challenges. You know, we have a $2 billion liability. There are no assets out there. There's nothing that can be sold. There's no taxes that can be raised to cover that much. Just to give you a sense of the scale of the challenge that we have, you know, you might find a $10 million solution. A $10 million solution doesn't come close to sniffing a real solution. You know, we need something in the order of hundreds of millions of dollars. And so when it comes to finding savings through current employees' retirements, whether it's on the healthcare or the pension side, much of that has already been done. We had experts come in and look at our finances every which way, and they showed us very clearly that our current employees, they pay more towards retirement than the average in the United States and receive less than the average in the United States. So those solutions have already been covered. We need something beyond that.
And Bob DeRobio?
I believe that it takes constant monitoring of the situation to look in every claim that is before us, whether it is in a city department, a school department, whatever area it is, and to make sure that the people are adhering to the process to of the claim that they have. There are a lot of dollars wasted. There are a lot of people out there that are using these claims to collect from the city when they really can be active members of the city in some other capacity. So looking at the claim, looking at their disability, looking at what's keeping them out of work, looking at what's keeping the payments coming to them, and judging where they can be of better use to the city. I would also like to address the issue of looking at large chunks of money to go into the correcting the pension liability. If we don't look at every additional dollar that's coming into the city, whether it's $1 million, $3 million, $15 million, then I don't think we're ever going to get out of this situation where we have this unfunded liability. We have to take every additional dollar coming into the city and putting it towards that liability.
And Kobe?
You know, the question was about disability fraud. And what I would like to say is that's why we'll stick to what I've been saying all along. It's about residency. It's about people that live here, okay? Providence is one of the only cities where people will break their necks to get a city job. Why? It's not because it's luxurious. It's because they know these are some of the things that they can get away with because there's no oversight. There's no one watching. I know. I'm in the city every day in the streets. I've gotten out my car sometimes and seen city workers, and I put my hand up like, really? The break's over. So we need people that live in Providence to work for Providence. Okay, so every time we do this, you know, hiring from out of state and looking for people elsewhere, no, we need people that love this city. That's how you stop fraud. You hire people that love the city they live in. Because when you can get on 95 and head down south or whichever way you're going, after work, why would you care about not cheating the system? You don't care because you don't pay taxes here and you don't live here. So let's change this situation to where every time we're looking for some city workers, we're always going outside the city.
Dee Dee Whitman, your view on disability.
So again, when I spoke with people on the finance council of our city council, again, there wasn't an accurate census of what the retirees' health care, how it was being spread out. They didn't know who was on disability. They didn't know how many were on who were eligible for Medicare, who were still on private insurance. You need to find out exactly what the mess is and find out who is getting what and how much that costs. I've spoken to a pension attorney in the metropolitan area in New York, and there are absolutely inventive ways that you can entice your retired employees. But again, I passed on a question when you were talking about the water board, I'm 100% against selling the water to make up for the unfunded pension liability. It's a one-time fix, and it's a Band-Aid, and it's not the real answer to fixing the pension problem. And who's to say when the water is in a private developer's hands that our quality and our prices may be threatened by an outside developer, and forgive me, an outside business who owns our water. So.
Something we hear a lot about from both the commercial folks in business and from homeowners is what could you do to stabilize property taxes? We're gonna start with Dee Dee Whitman.
So. The tax stabilization has to be managed in an efficient and comprehensive way. The distribution of TSAs has to be scrutinized much more than it is already. We need oversight to ensure developers are holding to the letter of the law. And I'm very concerned about the lack of enforcement of these arrangements. We hand them out so frequently that it diminishes the quality of the projects. And we should be incentivizing businesses to come to Providence, and each deal is different and special. So that's what I have to say about TSAs.
And we'll go to Mayor Alorza next.
I believe you were asking about keeping tax rates low.
Stabilizing tax rates, yes, for both homeowners and commercial rates.
Right. So, and I feel very proud of the fact that
You know, over these past 4 years, it's the first time in 75 years since a mayor hasn't raised taxes in his first term. First time since World War II that that has happened. Now, you know, I practiced as an accountant for a couple of years after college, and it has served me well in everything that I've done, and it served me well in this role. And what we've done, frankly, is a couple of things. You know, watching every single dollar that comes in and out very closely, moving towards realistic budgeting, no more hoping for one-time revenue sources, and lastly, planning for the long term. Every decision that we make, we think, where is this going to lead us in 5 and 10 years down the road, and does this help or detract from where we want to go? So over the past 4 years, what we've done is we've balanced every single budget that we passed. We've paid down a $13 million cumulative deficit, as well as $7 million in lawsuits that predated my tenure. We've seen a two-notch upgrade to our credit rating. And for the first time in a long time, the city now has a rainy day fund for the coming inevitable recession when it hits. So in no uncertain terms, our short-term finances are as strong as they've been at least in a decade, and we've done this all without raising taxes.
Kobe Dennis, your message on taxes.
Sure. So we're known here in our city for small business, yet we have neglected to bring them to the table. There's thousands of small businesses. And I think anytime you're talking stabilization, you have to work with the numbers. And what do we have? The one thing that we haven't done in this city for the last couple of administrations is really use the resources that we have here. We keep looking elsewhere. We have the tax base. We have the people here. We have the talent. We need to get all local businesses together, let them all know if we all want to survive, we all have to be part of the solution. Okay, so everyone's going to take a hit. Okay, that's how we have to talk to the people. If you're here in Rhode Island, if you're here in Providence for the long haul, then you need to come to the table and agree to some collective governance. So my goal would be to get everyone together so we can solve this problem together.
And we want to get the views, of course, of Bob DeRobbio. Taxes.
Sure. We have heard that there hasn't been a tax increase in this first administration of the mayor, and that is true. What has happened, though, is that we've had two reevaluation periods. We have one coming up in 2019, and we had one during the past 4 years. So although there has been no tax increase, I would ask anyone in this audience if they have seen their taxes go up within the city of Providence. And I would feel very confident that at least over 70% of this audience would say that they have seen their taxes go up, not through a tax increase, but through a reevaluation of property. What we have to do is look at the incentives that we are giving for absentee landlords that are coming into this city, buying up properties and charging phenomenal rates and their tax structure in what they're paying the city. We have developers that have bought over 22 properties on Benefit Street alone and are changing them into housing or dormitory space, selling it by the bedroom. We have had the same developer buy over 35 properties on the east side of Providence and doing it the same way. It makes for a family of a mother, father, and two children who can afford $3,000 a month rent come here and say they can't afford to invest in our community because these other landlords are making $7,000, $8,000, $9,000, $10,000 selling by the room. I think that has to be looked at, and that's what I would do.
Our next question will segue on that. How does Providence maintain its identity and status as a creative capital without this leading to gentrification? We're going to start with Bob DeRobbio, since you were last year first now.
Again, I would look at what has happened with the number of people, the number of absentee landlords that are coming into the city, and throwing our tax structure out of whack. We also have to look particularly at the Airbnbs that have come up on the various neighborhoods, and not for those people that live in the houses that are the Airbnbs, but for those absentee landlords that are just giving a code for families to come in and rent by the evening, rent by the week. It is bringing prostitution into the neighborhoods. It is bringing open urination in the streets. It is bringing a number of cars to the neighborhood that are just parked on the streets. And the poor families with one or two children that are trying to live in these areas just are finding it difficult to do. There has to be some way, there will be some way to tax these people at a different rate and to not allow this to happen. One of the ways is to get the colleges and universities to invest in additional dormitory rooms so that it takes away a number of those properties that they that their students are currently renting because there is no space on campus.
Mayor Alorza, your response.
I think there are a lot of ways that we can support the creative community. You know, we've had events such as PVD Fest downtown and events, community events in our neighborhood parks throughout the city. And so we want to make sure that we value our artists. But, you know, getting down to brass tacks, how do we actually help our artists continue to live here in the city? You know, for the past 3 years, we've had this partnership with RISD and Design by RI, where we've created the Design Catalyst program. And what we've done is we've taken small entrepreneurs in the design and creative space, and we've provided them three things. The first thing is up to a $35,000 grant. Second, technical assistance. But most importantly, what they've told us they value the most, we've also given them mentorship. So we connect our burgeoning artists with an existing business, with a creative spirit, with a creative spirit within it, and we match them up, and they, through this mentorship and the support that the city gives, you know, we've seen a number of businesses come out where perhaps they did some art on the side and they created some art on the side. Now they've left their jobs, they've created their own businesses, and they're selling around the world because the output of our artists is that strong, and we need to continue to support them.
And I believe that Dee Dee Whitman would be next.
So Providence is a quirky little city, and a lot has to do with the fact that we have such talent. We have musical talent, we have art talent, we have writing talent. There's a lot to the arts, and it makes us wonderful and makes us noted. There's a better way to do this. If I remember the days when all the artists were down in the promenade and the rent was virtually nothing. And then the promenade was bought to be developed, and the artists had to be, they were kicked out, and they were sent to Pawtucket, where I'm not sure it's thriving so well. It would be wonderful to take any of our abandoned space, or any where the city can work collaboratively with banks, with business people, and renovate areas where the artists can absolutely work and design and they would be able to thrive in these environments, but it takes partnerships to do it. But absolutely, we want to help our artists, and we want them to stay here.
Kobe Dennis, gentrification.
Yeah, as I walked through the neighborhoods canvassing, as I just came from when I came here, gentrification is happening at a rapid pace, and it's mainly because, as I've been saying all along, its oversight is lacking. Okay, I don't really think we're that creative. It sounds good. We've had a couple of festivals and we've had a couple of decent ideas, but we're not the creative capital that we say we are. We need to do better. And the reason why people come here and do pretty much whatever they wish in this city, because I'm in the streets and I see it, is because they see that no one's watching. There's no oversight. There's no one going to check in on it. These college homeowners, they are buying up blocks and blocks and blocks from everyday neighbors that are struggling to just pay the rent. There should be some types of limitation on that. When they buy these homes, they should also, it's also not safe for the police, because when they buy these homes, police officers also have to go and answer calls, and you never know how many people are in the house. Code enforcement is non-existent. We need people to definitely work in the city that are watching out for these people that are coming into our city, just doing whatever they wish.
Are there any specific actions that you could take to improve the rail service to Boston? This came question from one of our neighborhood groups, and we're going to start with you, Kobe Dennis.
I don't. I haven't really thought about that just yet. I wish I could say I had a great answer for that, but I wasn't able to bring notes, as the instructions said. So I'll be very honest. I don't have a formulated answer for that yet, so I'll pass on that.
Dee Dee Whitman, what do you think about rail service improvements to Boston?
Well, First of all, Kobe, I did ask Holly if we were allowed to bring notes, and she did say yes.
Oh, boy, so. I got shafted on that.
May not be the last time, but who knows? What would I do? Well, I certainly, that's where our United States senators and our Congress people come in. I would absolutely go to Reid and to White House and to Cicilline and to Langevin and ask them to lobby. I do believe that the prices of homes in Boston is so exorbitant that it would be in our best interest to almost advertise Providence as a bedroom community, because we're almost chump change compared to what the prices are in Boston. And you need a first-rate rail line for commuters. And we can't do it by ourselves. That's a federal issue. And you need to engage our congressional reps and our senators to lobby for money for rail. It is critical that we have a first-rate public transit system, both within the city and, of course, intrastate.
And from Bob DeRobio.
I believe that we've done quite a bit to enhance the transportation within the city. In fact, 2 weeks ago, I was at a press conference that the mayor took part in with the intermodal transportation from the Rhode Island Hospital area, in bringing people within that area into the center of the city so that they could access all of the various modes of transportation that we had available to them. I would have to agree with Dee Dee that any enhancement of the services from Providence to Boston is more of a federal issue than it is a citywide issue, but I believe that we have done our part in making it very easy for people from within the Rhode Island Hospital area and the Allens Avenue area to get the transportation to our central transportation facility.
Mayor Alorza.
I think there are a few things that we can continue to do. You know, the Northeast Corridor is one of the most densely populated corridors in the entire country. What we also know is that the MBTA and the Amtrak line is also one of the oldest and most need of repair in the entire country. So we'd have to reach out to our federal delegation, but we have to continue to make the case. You know, Boston has been booming for about 15 years, yet it's the case that there's like this psychological barrier once we cross state lines. Mm-hmm. You know, Boston is separate and we're separate. But the truth is, if you go out to Silicon Valley, Cupertino, Palo Alto, you know, they're all about the same distance from San Francisco that we are from Boston, yet they think of themselves as the same environmental ecosystem. We need to think of ourselves with Boston as well. So there's a few things that I believe we should continue to do. Do direct marketing and outreach. The governor and I spent a day up in Boston speaking to about 150 Boston business owners about a year ago, making the case. We also need to talk about direct MBTA service at least once a day, you know, direct from Providence to Boston. We need to make the case that, you know, as Boston is booming, as they're getting pushed out because of rents, both residential and commercial, Providence should be the first thought on their mind, because we're not just a bedroom community, although I think that metaphor can work. I also think that we have a lot going for us, and they would want to be in Providence once they know everything that's happening here.
Mayor, we're going to start the next question with you. You've traveled out of state quite a bit. One of the news stations had you more than 60 times in the past 45 months. Now, you say on these trips, you get ideas for the city, and that this is a good thing. I'm just wondering what new programming has been put into effect because of your travels.
A great deal, Scott. And so I remember when I was running 4 years ago, you know, part of my campaign was, you know, we should do city services the way that Pittsburgh does. We should do summer learning the way that Houston does. Community schools the way that Cincinnati does. You know, we should learn from the rest of the country and cities and what they're doing and steal those ideas and bring them to Providence. So, for example, next Monday we're holding a press conference with all the universities and hospitals. And the reason why we're having that press conference is because of the work that we've done from trips that I took to Pittsburgh and St. Louis, and I saw the way that those cities have embraced universities and hospitals and really remade their economies based on their presence and their involvement.
That's come into Providence as well. You know, I've raised hundreds of thousands of dollars from organizations and from foundations as a result of connections and relationships that I've built. And also, you know, it's the mayor's job to go out and market the city as much as possible so that people hear firsthand from the leader of the city all the great things that are happening and trying to get them to come to Providence.
Bob DeRobio, traveling mayor, what's your view?
I haven't traveled at all this summer.
Probably knocked on a lot of doors.
I do believe, I would agree with the mayor, that it's the mayor's job to bring in industry to the city of Providence. I would, look at that testimony, though, and say, what has happened to the Dunkin' Donuts Center in the fact that there hasn't been any activity within the past 3 months within that center. And that, to me, is a core with bringing in people, but with bringing in events to that center that contribute to the lifeblood of the city of Providence. So I would be a full-time mayor. I would make sure that my travels took me to places that had a benefit to the city. The residents of the city would know firsthand why I am going to visit these places and what I am bringing back, and also what the recommendations are and what the final determination is from visiting those places.
Dede Whitman?
Well, there is the internet. I mean, you really can look and see what other cities are doing. And you can pick up a phone and call a mayor. I mean, mayors call mayors. My question is, when Mayor Alorza is out of town, who is running the city? Who is responsible? And what does each trip cost the city taxpayers? So there's a way. If you travel around, if you've traveled around in your life, you know what cities work, what don't. You do reading. That's what reading's about. And again, you pick up a phone and you call and you find out. And when you have your mayor's conference, there's always best practices that are on display. And you talk with what works and what makes a city fabulous, what makes it not so fabulous. So there's ways to do it when you're not out of town as often as you are.
Kobe Dennis?
So that brings me to the question of creative capital. How are we creative when we're copying everyone else's ideas? Shouldn't we be creating our own ideas? I don't need to go anywhere else to find out good ideas. I can go right up the street to AS220. I can go right to Onlyville. I can go to the West Side. I can go to South Side. I have all the cultural relevance here. I have all the people I need. I have all the intelligence. We have some of the best colleges and universities in the world. RISD, Brown University, URI. Why would I need to travel to find ideas? I wouldn't. If I'm going to call this city the creative capital, guess what? People are going to follow me. I want people to come here and follow us and say, you know what? I visited Providence 3 times this year. Why? Because they have great ideas.
Thank you so much. I guess we're winding down and getting close to our final round. So we're going to have everyone to give their closing arguments. And we have our timekeepers here. Everyone will be given a minute to give a closing argument. And since you've all been so good, if you go over 15 seconds or so, we're probably not going to bring out the hook. So let's start with Kobe Dennis, your closing argument.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you all for coming out and spending the evening with us. And I want to apologize for, my lack of information on the rail system. Although I utilize it, it's just something that hasn't come up within the voters. My platform came from the people. It came from you. I haven't knocked on one door and the person has said, what about the train system? That's not what they're talking about. I'm for the people, all right? So I'm up here before you as a citizen. All right, as a person just like you, just because we're sitting up a little higher doesn't make me any smarter or better than any of you. All right, I'm running for mayor of the city of Providence to show you that I can make a better Providence. Okay, and no disrespect to Ms. Whitman, but I've been running since October 5th, and my slogan has been a better Providence. So great minds think alike. But I'm here to say September 12th, Kobe Jason Dennis will be on the ballot. I've been running for over 300 days, and I'm happy to serve you. Thank you. Oh, we can clap now. We can clap now. Thank you. Thank you.
Applause is allowed. Now we're going to Dede Whitman, your closing statement.
So the New York Times says Providence is compelling, cosmopolitan, creative, and filled with inordinate amount of smart people. I agree. But there are also many neighborhoods decayed by urban blight, which degrades and diminishes the lives of too many of our citizens. And we cannot solve these problems with the status quo government that is neither smart, creative, nor transparent. We need more resources for public safety, including a fire chief. We need to eliminate the speed cameras, which are nothing more than a money grab. We have highly qualified men and women in the police department who are able to do that job if allowed. The challenge for us to come is we need to do more with less. It's time to unify the city and work collaboratively with our state and local leaders. And I am Diane Whitman, or Diane Didi Whitman. I'm the independent woman, and I'm running for mayor of Providence on November 6th. I ask for your vote.
And now, closing argument from Bob DeRobio.
I'd like to thank all of you for attending this evening. I think that many of you have read what my platform is and what my background is, mainly in education. So I believe that I would hope for your trust in giving you a strong educational system within the city of Providence. I would ask for your trust in bringing a fair and comparable education to all students within the city of Providence. I also feel that you are looking for honesty, integrity, credibility, and transparency in your government. I am that person that can deliver that to you. I am not looking for any other elected office other than the mayor of the city of Providence, and I look forward to your vote on Wednesday, September 12th for that position. Thank you very much.
And the last word from Mayor Elorza.
I want to thank everybody also for being a part of this conversation. And I'll begin where I began about an hour and a half ago, that it's been the privilege and the honor of a lifetime to serve as the mayor of this amazing city for the past 3.5 years. Look at what we have done together. We've kept taxes low, and we have completely turned around our short-term finances. We're investing in our future and putting $50 million into our roads, sidewalks, and infrastructure, with a plan to put another $250 million to fix our schools over the next 5 years. We're investing in our kids, and those investments in our kids are paying dividends. We're seeing the most violent forms of crime at near record levels that we haven't seen in over 30 years. Our city services are as strong as they've been in the city's history. We've done this while fixing over 400 abandoned properties throughout Providence, and we've done this at the same time that we're pushing back on the federal government and letting Donald Trump know that his vision of America will not carry the day. Instead, we have our own values that we are more than ready to fight for, and he can expect a strong voice of opposition whenever his principles and his policies conflict with our values. It's been an honor to be the mayor, and I ask for your vote on September 12th so we can continue this progress for 4 more years. Thank you.
I want to thank everyone here. Want to thank you all for coming. Want to thank all of our candidates for keeping this a very civil discussion, unlike what we see in the national venue. And I want to thank the League of Women Voters and, of course, URI for sponsoring this forum. Thank you all.